Next on the agenda is a presentation from two of my OSC colleagues, Tracy Stern and Jonathan Silvest. They'll give a short presentation and take your questions about examining the regulatory framework in a constantly changing market landscape. And please feel free to join the conversation over Twitter during the presentation using the hashtag on the PowerPoint. Please join me in welcoming Tracy and Jonathan.
Thank you, Susan, and thanks to all of you for taking some time out of your busy schedules to join us today. We really appreciate it. I'm going to talk about changing markets and the impact that those changes have had on all of you and on the regulators and what we need to do. Specifically, we're going to talk about the impact of the changes and on participants, including investors, marketplaces, and dealers. And we're going to talk a bit about the pressure points that you're feeling in the context of these changes and what steps we're taking to address them. Jonathan is then going to talk a little bit about the OPR review, the order protection review that we're working on, and what steps we're taking to deal with the concerns that you've raised. So this is our market. Thank you, Wendy, for the slide. It shows you the interconnectedness of the participants, the dealers, the marketplaces. It shows the complexity of moving orders and trades across multiple marketplaces through smart order routers, out through data vendors, into the information processor, into IROC and its market surveillance system, and through CDS for clearing. It shows the number of markets, and the slide really captures what you've been faced with and what is contributing to your concerns. We know that the market is changing rapidly. We've seen increased competition amongst the dealers. We've also seen increased competition amongst marketplaces, both internally within Canada and globally, as technology has made the world a very small place. We've seen developments in technology where speed has allowed people to do what they've always done, but much faster. We've talked about nanoseconds and picoseconds and an arms race that allows people to take trading to the speed of light. We've also talked about and seen the evolving market structure, which is complex and interconnected, as the previous slide has shown. We've seen lit markets. We've seen dark markets. We now have a proposal that combines the two, something in between. And we've seen changing participants. It may not be the participants and what they're doing that's changed, but maybe the labels. We've always had speculators in our markets interacting with investors, but now they have a new name, high-frequency traders. They interact with investors, with participants. The investors are interacting with computers, with algorithms, and we have computers interacting with computers. All of these changes have impacted all of you, and as regulators, we need to examine that impact. So the first step for us is needing to understand the complexities of the market, and there's a number of ways that we've taken to do so. We've hired experts in trading and in clearing, adding knowledge to our staff that helps us to understand what you, the trading participants, are going through. We have talked to participants and encouraged open dialogue with all of you so that we can get views on the issues that are of concern to you. It's important for us to get information about all sides, who is impacted and who is not. We also have been talking to experts in the context of market structure, technology, trading, both from industry and from academia. And we do talk to regulators, some of whom are here today, and we talk about the similar issues that we are facing, both for us as regulators and what our participants are facing, and what the different options are for us to address those concerns. You have to remember that we don't live in a trading environment on a day-to-day basis, but we're doing all that we can to understand the challenges that those that do are facing. Another way for us to meet the challenges of a changing market is to make sure that our regulatory framework remains robust and evergreen. And there are a number of ways for us to do this. Do the existing requirements manage the risks? Are they missing anything? Before National Instrument 23-101, the electronic trading rule was even implemented, we hired a consultant to look at whether or not there are any gaps in the requirements. We had seen high-profile outages and a regulatory proposal by the SEC called Reg SEI, and we wanted to take steps to ensure that our rules were robust, to manage the risks of evolving technology. The consultation is concluded, and the consultant's report and our response to the report should be published soon. Another way to ensure that our rules are appropriate is to look at the rule holistically. Has it achieved the outcome that it was intended to achieve? The order protection rule has existed for many years with different titles and in different rules. Right now it's a CSA rule, but before that it was in the IROC rules, the RS rules, and the TSX rules before that. But has the market gotten too complex for OPR to work effectively and to achieve the outcomes that it was designed to achieve? It's a rule that seems so simple. You have to execute better prices better priced orders first. It's a very simple rule, a little bit hard to say. Has it achieved what it's intended to achieve, or has it just created costs and inefficiencies? Jonathan's going to talk a bit about OPR in a few minutes and what we're doing to try to address some of the issues that you've raised to us. Finally, there are circumstances when we need to examine those immutable principles that Howard and Susan had mentioned before. Is their interpretation really appropriate in a new and changing environment or when we're faced with innovation? We do this by starting with our mandate, the protection of investors, fostering fair and efficient capital markets, and confidence in those markets. And then we examine those principles listed there: fairness, transparency, price discovery, liquidity, market integrity, and transaction costs. As Susan and Howard spoke about earlier, these principles are really the foundation of the market structure work that we have done over the last 10 years. But in an ever-changing environment, sometimes they need to be reviewed. We've taken a first principles approach in looking at Equitas as reflected in the notice that was published in August, and we're currently reviewing your input and insight that you've provided to us and the issues that we've identified. The use of the approaches to step back and examine our work and its impact on you will vary, but we're dependent on your feedback. This has been critical in the order protection rule review, and I'm going to turn it over now to Jonathan, who's going to discuss what we've been looking at and the issues that we found and how we're going to try to address them. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Tracy. So I thought it might be worthwhile to start off with looking at the question of why are we reviewing OPR at this time? And so as Tracy had indicated, it starts with our mandate, and that mandate being to protect investors and foster fair and efficient capital markets and confidence in those markets. As a result of our communications with industry, many of you who are in this room today, as well as what we have observed over the last few years, there are indications that there's the potential that inefficiencies have been introduced that have the effect of potential added cost burden on both dealers and investors. So this raises questions for us as to whether the various objectives of our mandate are out of balance or too far out of balance in the context of OPR. So Tracy had alluded to, has OPR achieved its goals with respect to protecting investors, instilling confidence, and promoting fairness in the market? Or have the potential inefficiencies that may have resulted outweighed or overshadowed some of those benefits? So let's look at some of those principles underlying OPR a little more deeper. So OPR was intended to provide the insurance, as Tracy had indicated, that better priced visible orders will be filled ahead of inferior priced orders, and that's essential to maintain investor confidence and their perception of fairness in the markets. It's also important to ensure the continued incentive of investors to show best price, provide information and liquidity to the market to contribute to the price discovery and formation process. Those principles are effectively embodied within the rule themselves, and the rule, as Tracy had said, was quite simple. The rule has the effect of ensuring that best price displayed orders are executed first. There are some technical exemptions in relation to things like race conditions or the effect of system outages on the ability for participants to comply. And as Tracy had indicated, what has changed, and part of why we're looking at this as well, is with the implementation of the rule itself, it was finalized in 2009 and put into place in 2011, is that it has raised, the primary point is it's raised the obligation up to the marketplace, although in practice it's probably still being carried out by the dealers. But more importantly, What has changed is that we're now seeing the more full evolution of a multiple marketplace environment. And we've had a few years now to look at what are the implications of the order protection rule in operation within that multiple marketplace environment. So some of the practical implications that we've seen through our work that we've done so far, much of which has been through consultation with you, is that participants who control their order flow generally need to have access to quote data as well as access to trading those best prices, whether directly or indirectly, in order to prevent trade throughs and comply with the rules. This can contribute to either the effect or at least the perception that dealers are captive to the services of a marketplace in order to access those quotes and access that trading and comply with the rule. Consequently, this might have implications on costs for those captive consumers and could create the potential for inefficiencies in the markets. And so in our discussions with industry, many of you who we met with as well, some of those costs that we have been hearing about most frequently relate to the technological burden associated with not only managing multiple markets but complying with OPR in those markets, the cost of data fees as a result of the or connected to the captive consumer issue, as well as the impact of OPR in relation to trading fees. So to the extent that when dealers have to send their active order flow to various venues to execute against the best price, they are subject to paying the active trading fees of those markets. Finally, in terms of cost or direct cost there, it also can impose frictions on the order and trade life cycle as a result of having to split up your order across many venues. In terms of some of the more philosophical inefficiency that can arise as a result or that we've heard can arise as a result of OPR is the potential for that OPR is creating a regulatory subsidy for marketplaces that may be offsetting the effect or ability for natural market forces to do what it otherwise should, and potentially may have pushed, in the views of many participants, has pushed the pendulum of competition perhaps too far. As well, to the extent that that is the case, this can add to additional fragmentation and complexities, which again feeds into the costs and potential inefficiencies of the market. So at the same time, there are other potential contributing factors to those some of those same exact costs and inefficiencies that we were talking about. That it can be hard to separate those between what is caused by OPR and what is caused by these other factors. So first off, we operate in a multiple marketplace environment. This introduces complexities and costs regardless of whether OPR exists. Secondly, we've heard a lot about how maker-taker pricing and increased fragmentation may contribute to increased intermediation, which in turn may have contribute to some of the same costs and inefficiencies in the form of trading costs as well as increased technology, for example, in handling increased message traffic. So what have we been doing to try to address some of these issues? So as I had indicated, we've met with a number of representatives from the sell side, representing large and small retail dealers, institutional desks, proprietary. As well, we've met with representatives from the buy side, from marketplaces, as well as vendors. And at a very high level, what we have heard or our takeaway from it is that there's a prevalent view that the principles of OPR are good, but perhaps the objectives are either not being achieved, or if they are, perhaps they're being achieved at an unreasonable cost. So, in addition to the work that we've been doing specifically on OPR to this point, I want to just draw attention to the data fees paper that we had published last year in November, and we recently published an update on the work that had been going on with that initiative. That went out for comment, examining some of the question around whether data fees in Canada are too high, whether there are things that we should be doing as regulators to address this. The outcome that you could see in the notice that was published on November 7th is that the views of commenters in terms of potential solutions were somewhat mixed, but there was a common view that perhaps there's a need for greater transparency around the fee review and approval process that we undertake with respect to marketplace fees, as well as support for the idea of a more utility-based information processor, but that might be more of a long-term objective if we were to pursue it. But with the data fee paper, it also indicates that we have decided to roll that into the OPR initiative, primarily as a result of the interconnectedness between access to data and the fees that are associated with that and OPR and this captive consumer issue. And so we've decided that in order to roll it in, it allows us to take a more holistic approach to looking at what are some of the potential options with dealing with issues associated with OPR. We've also been working with IROC to conduct some data analysis, given their rich set of data that they have access to, the purpose of which is to try to answer some of the questions that we've heard put to us, for example, and that raise questions around whether or not the benefits are being achieved. So, for example, who's being protected, to what degree, and at what depth are they being protected? So when we look at potential options, we've been working on developing and refining a range of potential options that might help to address some of these issues. So they're split into three approaches. The first is an approach whereby we could consider loosening the OPR regime. And that would options under there could go as far as eliminating OPR and reverting back to a best execution regime strictly, or could also involve the imposition of some sort of threshold whereby marketplaces or their displayed orders are protected above a certain threshold. There's also the approach where we could say the principles of OPR and the rule that's in place are important. We need to maintain those, but perhaps we can try to address some of the costs and inefficiencies more directly themselves. And so some of the options that could be considered there could include some form of caps on either data fees or trading fees, for example. The third approach would be some sort of combination of the two to try to mitigate the amount of impact on from both spectrums. So a little bit here on the loosening, a little bit there on the more direct oversight of the outcomes. So as Tracy had indicated earlier, though, while it's important to step back and re-examine the regulatory framework and the principles that are underlying our rules, as we are with the OPR review, whenever we think about making changes or adjustments, we have to think about what other new complexities and issues can arise as a result, and as was referred to earlier, these unintended consequences that can pop up. So, for example, if we were looking at loosening the OPR regime, what might be the impact in relation to other rules? For example, what does it mean to have unprotected markets in terms of the NBBO and the price improvement rules under the dark rules, how those price improvement rules should be applied? As well, what new potential costs could arise as a result of any new complexities that might result from a change in the market structure? How might investor perception be impacted if we were to loosen OPR and potentially weaken the protection that is currently afforded, particularly when, as we've heard from many of you, investor confidence may be lower than it has been because of events such as the macroeconomic factors that started in 2008, the perception that has been created as a result of some of high-profile technological glitches at marketplaces in the U.S., as well as the perception of HFT. What might be the impact on competition? How will, if we loosen the OPR regime, how might it affect some of the benefits that we've heard from you have arisen from the competition, particularly given the concentrated nature of our market? And lastly, regardless of what we do in terms of changing OPR, if that was the outcome, some of the same problems may persist, just to a different degree. In terms of the approach of addressing some of these costs and efficiencies more directly, this as well might have limited or short-lived effect. I think that we all have to acknowledge that marketplaces are for-profit entities, and to the extent that, we took an approach whereby of capping fees in some manner, they will either look, we should expect that they will look to recover that revenue through other services, new competition. They might also try to, recover some of that through other fees. Finally, I want to leave you with a thought that where change is to be made, if we are going to, if there is sufficient reasoning to for regulatory intervention in the context of OPR, the objective will still be to maximize the benefits of OPR or the intended benefits of OPR while minimizing the associated costs. So in terms of next steps, we're going to be completing our, data analysis with IIROC, taking the results of that together with all the results of the consultations that we've had, and trying to put that into some form of paper that we would put out for comment in early 2014. Whether that's going to be a consultation paper or a more further developed reflection of our thoughts in the form of rule proposal is yet to be seen, but this is our current aim. And so with that, I'll turn it back to Tracy, who's going to give a few closing comments.
Thanks, Jonathan. So you can see that we have a lot to think about, but our focus is clear. We're going to be responding to the issues that you have raised. We'll need to find the balance between different interests, between individual stakeholders and the market as a whole. We'll also focus on applying our mandate in a balanced way, aligning investor protection and fair and efficient capital markets. We are going to examine all of the issues to try to deal with the complexity. We'll obviously not be able to eliminate it, but we want to make sure that our policy, the proposals that we review, and our approach do not exacerbate it. We do this with the knowledge that the interconnectedness of our markets, of our participants, make understanding all sides critical, and we need to move carefully because a change in one area can impact many others. Finally, we'll continue to ask you for your input. You've been extremely helpful in the ETR review, in the OPR review, and we'll continue to draw on you, one of our most important resources, for your insights and thoughts on market structure. And we thank you for your participation. So now we're happy to take some questions, and Jonathan and I will be here all day, and we're happy to answer any questions during that time. But if anybody has any questions, we're happy to take them now. Okay, Fanula, I don't know.
Hello, Fanula Martin. I'm an independent consultant. My question, I'm glad to hear that you're reviewing all sorts of options for moving forward. If you introduce something like a threshold for minimum market share, for example, would that apply to all markets or just new marketplaces going forward?
I think the intention is not to grandfather, but we haven't come to any conclusions in terms of what options we're going to think about or propose. I think for us, in looking at thresholds, very complicated. And I think the intention, like I said, is not to grandfather the old, but everyone, it will be subject to the thresholds.
Rich Miller from Omega. The complexity in all the multiple markets that we have existing is sort of a, it's sort of not real because so many of the markets are held by one player. So, I mean, is it really as complicated as all that? And I just want to say on our own behalf, we're introducing yet another marketplace. But we, our new marketplace in our consultations with the OSC and with the street is strictly PAYGO. There are no data fees. There are no fees whatsoever other than execution. And I think that's a way to look at how markets should be moving in the future.
Thank you. Any other questions? No. As I said, David.
Yeah. Jonathan, you mentioned one of the factors of complexity and fragmentation is the make-take model. So we see it as like a very negative impact to the markets. It's really a backdoor way of introducing sub-penny pricing. And it's also unfair in that some customers get the sub-penny pricing, others don't. I'm just wondering if a review of make take is going to be rolled into the OPR or is that going to be addressed as a separate stream within OC?
I would say it's a combination of the two. First and foremost, there are implications in terms of trading fees for in the context of OPR because of the requirement to go to multiple venues, of course. But at the same time, there are a number of concerns associated with maker-taker that we have heard that are not, again, connected with OPR because of some of the incentives that are being provided or the effect of some of those incentives. And, I mean, we're well aware of some of those through the letters, comment letters that you've provided, David. If the question is, are we looking at it? We're looking at trading fees. Maker-taker is a part of trading fees. So whether it ends up in anything we put out in terms of OPR or it's separated out is yet to be seen, but the answer is yes, we are looking at it.
Any other questions? Okay, so as I said, Jonathan and I are here all day, so we're happy to answer your questions. So now we're leading into a break, and so if you can come back at 10:45, I think that's the time, maybe 10:50, that would be okay. So enjoy your break, and thank you very much.